and gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Good morning to you, and welcome to the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm Hal Sparks. I'm filling in for Steph. She's under the weather, apparently sounds like a bag of gravel being shoved through a turtle.
Yes.
Vocally,
yes.
Speaking, is that a good description? Crystal Boy here.
Very much so.
It's nice actually to be able to fill in and have you and Jim will be joining us. There he is.
Yes,
very exciting to have the two of you here. Usually when I'm here, I'm flying solo.
Yeah, it's just got Tony in here with you.
Yeah, right.
And
yeah.
He doesn't talk.
No, he doesn't. He just nods off on the board, and his head hits a button, and then suddenly there's just screaming noise. Exactly. So Steph is feeling a little under the weather, so I'll be filling in for her today, last minute. We're
this
up and running.
This is what it would sound like if Steph were here.
Good morning, hello.
When she called me this morning, she sounded like Ron, the owner of the show who's trying to kill her for the insurance money.
Okay, sure,
this
right.
Is good.
Did she tell long, drawn-out stories like he does? Did she just go on and on and on? Because it's great.
So then, in 1964.
And then the first person you met was this person you won't know, but it's true. He's related to my first cousin. And that's how it, 6 hours later. It's a good time.
Whose ancestors were actually on the Mayflower. Not on the ocean.
We love Ron, and that's why we can play.
That's right.
And, of course, send all of our collective love to Steph so that she heals up well and is back on Ed Schultz's show as well as soon as possible.
On Thursday. She's supposed to be on tomorrow.
Yeah.
Again.
Yeah.
She was on MSNBC, and the video of it is posted up at stephaniemiller.com.
Mm-hmm.
She was on yesterday, and at the end, she had a little bit of a coughing fit.
There's a bunch of that going around. I had that dry cough for a little while. It's the lungs version of dry heaving, and they're just like, I got nothing, but I'm just going to make some noise.
Right.
I got nothing. So we have, obviously, there's a lot going on. Yesterday, oh, my God.
What?
The huge step forward. We have a bipartisan bill.
Oh, thank God.
Two parties involved in a bill that, well, for the last time, quite frankly, Olympia Snow voted yesterday to help get the bill out of the Finance Committee. And, of course, she said immediately afterwards that if it includes a public option, she won't support it or vote for it. But it's out of committee. And all this back and forth and cajoling that everybody, has been complaining about Obama doing, why won't he come out hard for a public option? And why was it? Because it would have slammed the door shut on it in the Finance Committee because this is where all the idiots reside.
Yeah.
This is the most closed-minded, the most conservative, which I think go together.
Corporate whores.
Exactly. Yeah. Thank you. I'll tap dance. And you set off the claymores. I think that'll be our role this morning, Jim, and it's great. But that was the issue, was that we had to get it out of here. This is the last committee to go through. It could have been the first or the third or whatever, but they held out the longest because this is the ego corner,
right,
of the Senate writ large. I mean, they just, in a world of, where fiscal conservatism is the only thing that holds almost as much parry as being pro-defense, which is absurd because they both end up just throwing money at problems in a bad way and not solving anything. But but these two, they really do think of themselves as equally important. And then, trying to get any kind of legislation always gets hung up in this particular area. So finally it got through, thanks to, in part, to Olympia Snow.
We'll take it where we can get
exactly.
it, I suppose.
Yeah,
that's why he was buttering her up.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Of course. And the truth is, she's not going to vote for the bill when it gets put together. There's no question, because it's going to have a public option
yes.
in it. Trigger or no trigger, none of them are going to vote for it, so there's no reason to put a trigger in.
But they won't need her anymore.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's beyond the point, and it looks like it'll be a 50 vote with a one,
Joe Biden.
With Joe Biden, yeah.
Right.
Coming, yeah, marching down. Although, obviously we have...
He'll tell an endless anecdote before he...
right, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, Joe, we've lost another 40,000 people. Get to come on, man. Wrap it up.
You're killing more people than the health insurance.
Exactly, yeah. Boredom is a disease worse than... Yeah, all right. But we do have some cuts of Obama first speaking sort of extemporaneously beforehand before he made his remarks.
This was right after the vote happened.
Right, okay. So, it's, track one.
I think not only Chairman Baucus and others, but in particular... Senator Snowe has been extraordinarily diligent in working together so that we can reduce costs of health care, make sure that people who don't have it are covered, make sure that people who do have insurance have more security and stability, and that over the long term we're saving families, businesses, and our government money.
Okay. So and now that the vote is out of committee, I'm going to... Put her on an ice floe.
Right. Shove her out to sea, and she can see what the polar bears have been going through.
Yeah.
Well, you know, and again, I was talking to Chris when we were listening to these before the show started, but he's really getting much better, and I think they, honestly, this isn't an accident. They held these back for a while.
Yeah.
But their sales points on the reform itself are solidifying because this whole that security and stability line, which I think is very good because it really does carry what the problem is. Nobody's secure in the insurance that they have now. You can be kicked off when you're sick, after you've already had treatment and recovered, so that they don't retroactively have to pay. There's just so that stability and security aspect is missing, and this will add it. A public option would add that element to it, of course. And then I think the language of saying a better deal for America is a nice, is a soft selling point. Is it, makes people comfortable. The idea that, this is a deal. We're getting a deal. It works. It's smarter. And so he's tacking these on to make sure that they get out there. Pushing that. So let's hear the second one, where he's not, super excited about the Olympia Snowe vote. But
I never count chickens before they're hatched, but this is obviously another step forward in bringing about a better deal for the American people.
Right. There you go. Better deal for the American people. Hmm. And, of course, counting the chickens before they hatched, as opposed to orange hatched, which means beat while they're still in their shells.
Right.
It's like jumping up and down on the egg crate. So this is orange hatching. Then he made his formal remarks.
Today we reached a critical milestone in our effort to reform our health care system. After many months of thoughtful deliberation, the fifth and final committee responsible for health care reform has passed a proposal that has both Democratic and Republican support. This effort was made possible by the tireless efforts of Chairman Max Baucus and the other members of the Senate Finance Committee.
Mm-hmm. I think bipartisan is not something I care too much about these days because I don't think there's a two-party system anymore.
Right.
I think the entire two-party system is housed inside the Democratic Party. I think you've got the entire spectrum from totally liberal to totally conservative just in the Democrats.
Uh-huh.
So you can actually have a substantive argument based on all that just in there. And then the Republicans have just gone BS crazy and they're just way off in, la-la land, making no sense. And that's not a party. That's an ideology.
Yeah.
And that's not functional. A party actually that everybody's there having a good time, and the whole point is that we all, end up better for this.
Yeah, and there ain't a good time going on.
No,
there.
Not at all. So
even Harry Truman said, "I don't trust bipartisan. When a fella tells me he's bipartisan, I know he's voting against me."
Right, exactly. and having one vote is not bipartisan, and they know that, and that's why they're holding such a strong line on everything. That's why they're the party of no, because they don't want to be able to, they don't want bipartisanship, because quite frankly, he campaigned on it.
Right.
And it would be, all their job is right now is to kill all of his campaign promises, and which, by the way, they're failing at miserably. The stimulus package went through, Sonia Sotomayor got elected. There's going to be a public option. There is going to be a health care bill this year.
Yep.
Don't Ask, Don't Tell and DOMA are next. These are all being, it's like a checklist in the White House, and they're just screaming as they each get checked off.
Yeah.
The use of the word bipartisan, I find...
grating?
Oh, yeah. Well, I find it's the most amazing reach ever. You know what I mean? Because it's like, there's 100 senators, and one of them is that, Yeah, so I don't buy it.
Maybe Larry Craig is a bipartisan. We don't know.
That's true. No, right? Yeah. I
By curious partisan?
I don't think so. I don't think so at all.
I love my wife.
Yeah, right. And so can you. Please,
Let
someone
me
take
be clear. I am not gay. I never have been gay.
I can't say anything about the future. The will-be gay is a potential, right? I can't rule that out. Legally, I cannot swear on a Bible.
I have had sex with men in bathrooms.
Right.
But not in a gay way.
You know, I was not, they were on the receiving end, which makes me not gay in the Brazilian system.
I love my wife.
Yeah.
Who doesn't? I actually got to fly through that airport or whatever, and you can't walk by without people. You're walking around.
It's a
like,
tourist attraction.
Why are all those people pointing at the bathroom? And you're like, oh, that's the one. That's
In Minneapolis.
I'm afraid to go in. But apparently they had a big, you know, they cleaned it up. That was how he got busted. It was part of the sting.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because they were like, right. Enough is enough.
They took out the koala baby changing station.
Right.
Yeah, because that was easy for people to bend over.
Oh, wow.
It was in a bit.
Well, I don't know.
I don't know. It's not a lot of back support.
No.
On the koala baby changing station. That's not right. Why is that guy squatting over the hand dryer? You don't want to know.
No, you don't want to know.
That's horrible. All right. So, okay. Continuing with this. And ironically, the track number number five, and then we'll go into number six.
It's a product of vigorous debate and difficult negotiations. After the consideration of hundreds of amendments, it includes ideas from both Democrats and Republicans, which is why it enjoys the support of people from both parties. And I want to particularly thank Senator Olympia Snow for both the political courage and the seriousness of purpose that she's demonstrated throughout this process.
And when she votes against the final bill, I will kick her to the curb.
Right. And she's a people now. She's a people.
Yeah.
That's funny. So Olympia Snow has now become plural. Because, I mean, in all honesty, she's not a people. She's a person. It enjoys the support of a Republican person.
People. Yeah.
Not a people. There are no people on the other side. There's a person. There's a person. Right. So we're going to take a break.
Yep.
I'm Hal Sparks. I'm filling in for Steph. And, of course, I'm lucky enough to have Chris and Jim with me today. 1-800-STEP-12 is our number. We'll be back right after this.
It's full of witches and strange creatures of the night.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm Hal Sparks, filling in for Steph today. She is under the weather.
She sounds like crap.
I'm trying to be nice. I'm trying to respect.
She sounds like crap.
Okay.
Well, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Yeah, that's what it would sound like.
Right. She sounds like a character in the Star Wars cantina, so she's not going to be able to come in.
You will never find the more wretched hive of scum and villainy.
Coming up in the next break, we have Reverend Jim Wallace from Sojourners. He's released a faith declaration for health care reform. They're holding a conference, a call with pastors in key states later this month to bring faith leaders to D.C. to raise the moral voice for reform. They're a fantastic organization. We will talk to him in just a little bit. But on the phone line, we've got Don in Chicago, who thinks health care is totally socialism. Don, are you there?
I'd like to know, if you study the Mattachine Society, if you study black liberation theology, if you study Marxism, it seems like that is exactly what the Democrats are implementing on America. And I
want
to
know, Marxism?
Why do you think that socialism is a better system than what America has right, that has
that's, well, that's a straw, that's a straw man argument. You're bringing like you're running on the assumption that I think socialism is. I think certain socialist policies do work. Well, yeah. So am I, if I agree in fire departments or public schools,
national parks,
exactly. Mm-hmm. These are all under your definition socialism. The interesting thing about the healthcare debate and the idea that it's somehow socialism is that socialism is a political system that is laid in place and there is no other room for another system.
You're one party Democratic Party.
No. Well, no, the public one party. Hold on. This is a public, again, the push in the healthcare is for a public option. It is not for an entire takeover of the system. That's a push that's been offered by the other side, and that's absolutely not true. Yeah, right. You wish. The truth is you lie. The truth is that the socialism, fascism, Marxism meme that everybody pushes is a way to deny any kind of balance to the argument.
There isn't balance.
Sure, there is. There's absolutely balance to it.
I'm a homeowner.
Okay.
And I look at my taxes.
Right.
And bam, it goes up to $4,000 a year, $5,000 a year. But renters and everybody that's not a homeowner doesn't have to share in that.
Yeah, but you also get to hold on. You also get to write off up to $15,000 of your mortgage every year when a renter doesn't get to write off any part of it, no matter how much they pay.
Mm-hmm. And when does that stop? What I'm saying is you're
Oh, I see. So you pay $5,000 a year in your property taxes, and you're assuming that and you've got $15,000 that you can write off in your own mortgage or whatever, and then renters don't get to write off any of it. But your concern is that over time, a push for a socialist agenda will somehow raise your property taxes from $5,000 to $15,000, and so it's this slippery slope that you're concerned about because you're afraid that we're going to use all that money to provide services for everyone that don't deserve it. So children who are born,
not that they don't deserve it, and don't play the bleeding heart liberal game.
I'm not playing. I'm not. By the way, I'm not playing the bleeding heart liberal. I'm absolutely qualified to be a bleeding heart liberal. But go ahead.
Okay. But that way, I'm not implying. I'm asserting, and you're agreeing. That's
yeah,
fine.
Absolutely.
Because what we need to do is, like you said, there are still a few people in the Democratic Party who aren't Marxists. Those people need to be identified.
Well, that's like me saying there's maybe two people in the Republican Party who aren't theocrats. Or are corporatists, quite frankly.
Well, that's probably about right, actually.
Yeah, yeah. I think the Republican Party is entirely divided down the middle between theocrats and corporatists, and there's a weird mix of the two in there that are specifically dangerous and psychotic.
Yeah, you've got Mr. Wallace coming on later. Do we then sell out religion to a guy like that?
Sell out religion?
Are you one of the big purporters of the conservative Bible? Do you think the whole,
cut out the liberal crap.
Yeah.
Jim Wallace wouldn't last 5 minutes with me in a debate on biblical matters, but that's not what
Oh, why is that? And why in particular is that? Is that because you believe that, Jesus wasn't a liberal, that he was more of a Reaganite?
Jesus wasn't a liberal, nor was he a Reaganite. He was the Messiah. So, I don't want to get off the spin-off on religion. But
you can't make a moral argument. No, we got to take a break. I appreciate the call, though. This is Hal Sparks. I'm filling in for Steph while she's out sick today. I've got Jim and the lovely Chris in the studio. This is Hal Sparks. It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
And you know what I appreciate about Stephanie Miller? It's clean. It's clean funny.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm Hal Sparks, filling in for Steph. She's, in the immortal words of Crystal Voice, she sounds like crap today.
She took
the day off.
She sounds like Brenda Vaccaro after a long night of smoking road flares.
See, I don't know that that's necessarily a bad thing. I think that might be just a new niche for, as it were.
We are lucky enough to have on the line with us Reverend Jim Wallace from Sojourners. Yay! How are you?
Hi, Hal.
Hi. Do I call you Reverend Jim or?
Jim's fine.
Jim, fantastic.
I hope Stephanie's listening. Tell her I'm offering prayers for her healing.
Oh, the nice thing about prayer is I don't even think she has to hear it.
That's right.
That's one of the cool things about it, according to the Harvard study.
Obviously, a big turning point because all the healthcare got out of its final committee yesterday, and we're now move into the real debate, I think. And obviously, you present I think a unique viewpoint on this, and I think it's an important one. The moral argument, for why we take care of each other. Perhaps you can speak to that,
I heard, Jesus was invoked by your last caller. So here's something that
weakly, though. It was a poor invocation.
I think Jesus would care about this. We've all read, it's been out now, the American Journal of Public Health finds that nearly 45,000 uninsured people die annually as a consequence of not having insurance. That's one needless death every 12 minutes, 120 a day. My bottom line for health care reform is whether those people get covered. 46 million people haven't got health insurance, and a lot of folks who do are not getting the help that they need. And we've run stories about the woman had her breast cancer surgery scheduled and then had it canceled because they discovered a pre-existing condition called acne.
Right.
And so this system is broken. It's wrong, and it works at the top. For those at the top, it works well. But for those at the bottom, it doesn't. And if we're talking about Jesus and religion and faith, apart from politics, I would hope people would understand that Jesus would say, look out for those at the bottom. As you've done to the least of these, he says in Matthew, you've done to me. So our bottom line is very simple. Are we going to bring people into the system or keep letting them fall through the cracks?
I couldn't agree more. And I think it's interesting the languaging that gets used in what 44 to 47,000 people who die every year because they don't have insurance. That these are Americans, and this is something that's sort of left out of it by the other side. They intentionally do this as if people can help, and we can connote that to, well, maybe some of them are illegal, maybe some of them aren't, but they're not American. It's just people, as if that doesn't matter in and of itself, as if our caring stops at our borders, as if our caring stops at the end of our yards.
Well, when Jesus healed people, he didn't ever ask for their documentation.
Or a copay, right.
Or a copay.
Exactly.
I mean, look, if the churches have been doing health care every day. We run hospitals and clinics, and we don't ask any questions about whether somebody's documented or not.
Right.
Now, this bill and the White House is not going to support health care for undocumented people. Churches will do it anyway.
Right.
And what happens is we have to take care of the people who fall through the cracks every single day.
Right.
And so we're at least saying you can't leave legal immigrants in a worse shape of this bill than before. You can't start saying, we're not going to cover the children of undocumented people. We're going to make people present stuff in the ER. We're going to evaluate this bill by that criteria, whether or not people who have been left out are now included. And we'll look at this new Baucus bill with Snow's vote. We'll look at all that. But the bottom line for a lot of people of faith, and this is not for us a Republican Democrat thing. It is in the Hill. It's all about who wins and who loses in the midterm elections and how to defeat Obama. And but for us, we're going to look at this through the lens of those who are left out of a system and who are sick and even who are dying. Mm-hmm. And that for us is a moral and a religious issue.
Right. And it's interesting to me. I often get messages on Twitter and from other places when I'm dealing with the healthcare issue that some people will say, and Don, our last caller, was similar to this in saying that, why is it my problem? Why should I care? And the argument they often use is some deadbeat dude has, five kids and they're on welfare and they're not, why should my tax dollars have to pay for them? And that's stunning, to me, just as an argument, that lack of empathy, which has become, there was an attempt to make that a bad word this year.
Well, I think, not caring about our our neighbor, our brother. I guess that's a legitimate political opinion, not if you're religious.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So don't say that and then turn around and tell me we go to church or that you believe in God.
Or that we're a Judeo-Christian nation. Right.
And the truth is, even that, though, even not caring for your neighbor is not just wrong, it's stupid.
Mm-hmm.
Because finally, the common good is in our own good. When you have so many people who have to go to the emergency room to get their health care, and that's all they have, this makes the whole thing worse, you know, for all of us. I mean, I want my kids, I have an 11-year-old and a 6-year-old, I want my kids to live in a country where they know other people's kids are taken care of when they get sick.
Right.
That's part of what I want.
I've often said that with contagious disease on the rise and the international nature of our economy, where we move in and out and among each other so much, and that 60% of all bankruptcies are caused by medical bills, that the other side isn't even doing selfish right. There's an element where you're just not even doing selfish well. You can't take care of your. You have no financial win when 60% of these bankruptcies are happening. That it affects everything you buy, everything you sell, every neighborhood you could possibly live in that way. And then with people, you know, with things like swine flu and other things like that, if people don't have health insurance, they wait 3 to 7 days to go to the hospital. That's when they're most contagious, when they're when it can spread to the most people, and they don't even have that element from it. All moral, you know, argument aside.
Well, Republicans don't get sick. That's just poor people's disease.
Right.
They're immune.
So finally, it comes down to, you know, you want to tell your kids that we care about other people's kids too.
Right.
However, if you don't care about other people's kids, your kids will get sick sitting next to them in class.
Right.
So figure it out. I mean, the common good is finally our own good.
Right.
And so we've got to make the moral argument here. The what's in it for me argument is very short-sighted. And what's in it for you is a classroom full of kids who are all taken care of.
Right. And a generation of people who grow up knowing that they have this environmental safety net that other people haven't had. In the same way that older people, when the older generation finally had Social Security, there was a difference in quality of life that they could guarantee. Mm-hmm. And the grandparenting reflex in this country grew very much during that period because you didn't have to worry about the cost of your grandparents. They were taken care of. So they could just, the benefit of having them in your life was very strong.
And if you do the math, finally having a good health care system where everybody is involved and you focus on preventative care and wellness and all the rest, you're going to save money in the end.
Right,
it's going
absolutely.
To be more fiscally responsible, and we're all going to be healthier, physically and fiscally in the end. But short-term thinking is what they do in Capitol Hill and political thinking, and how can my vote affect the next election? I mean, that really is how they're calculating this.
Sure, right.
Waiting for a bridge to collapse before you fix it.
Exactly, and which has been our infrastructure system for quite some time. On the line with us, Reverend Jim Wallace from Sojourners. Your website is www.sojo.net, SOJO.net. You released Faith Declaration for Healthcare Reform. Is that on? That's on the website, I'm assuming, and people
it's
can.
It's on the web, it's just fundamental principles. We're not, you know, we haven't taken positions in the weeds on every amendment or every committee vote, but it's what are the principles that ought to guide this effort to reform a very badly broken system, and those principles, I think, are very foundational. They're what people of faith tend to believe about these things, that we have to make the moral case that this should be tested by whether affordable, accessible health care is truly universal after we're through. Fundamental principles like that, and that we shouldn't put, I believe, we shouldn't put undue burdens financially on the next generation. My kids are going to be around, but I think they would do better if we had a workable, healthy, responsible healthcare system.
Yep.
So all those principles should guide these next few weeks. And you're right, the real debate now does finally begin. And if we can put the politics aside and focus on really what is best for our kids and for all the kids and for the common good here, I think we could find some cooperation. I've learned not to expect that in the Congress, but at least among people of faith, we ought to put politics aside and say, we're going to make sure that everyone gets covered here. That's our bottom line.
Right. And I think that there is a point to us all reaching out to our representatives and going, look, you can go out on a limb on this because I've got your back.
Yeah.
And it's important, you know, as much as a lot of us want to call up our congressperson and yell at them half the time, that support also does help.
It really does, and it makes a huge difference.
Yeah. So I want to thank you. We have to take a break. Reverend Jim Wallace, thank you so much. Sojourners, www.sojo.net. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Great to be on your show again. Take care.
Yeah, cheers. Fantastic.
Yeah. I love that man.
What a Marxist.
I know.
You know, I'm the show atheist, but I really, really love that man.
Seriously. Well, you know, and this is, I don't know how much we have before we're going to take a break. We'll take a break and then we'll come right back.
Because
I want to talk a little bit about that, where I think, you know, atheism can be some of the most moral space, the most ethical space, if you allow for it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's something that gets pushed aside a lot. So, anyways, I'm Hal Sparks. I'm filling in for Steph while she's sounding like crap, I think is Chris's
words. Sounding like crap.
So, we'll be back right after this. The Stephanie Miller Show.
She's your human Prozac. It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm Hal Sparks, filling in for Steph today. Lost my mic there for a second. It was good. All right.
You did what?
I think it was my headphones there. I'm new to the equipment over here. I'm new to, you know, when I come in and I sit in, I don't sit in Steph's area. So
right.
I don't know. She might be haunting it right now. You know, don't touch that. Don't touch that. I don't like people touching my things.
Yeah.
Which is unfortunate for me when I'm guesting when she's here.
Yeah, because she...
So,
and you were up late last night, too.
I was. I was doing an event for the No Hate campaign last night. I hosted it and had a good deal. It was a comedy show to raise money for them. A lot of the comics from Chelsea Lately all came down.
Oh, cool.
They did the show. And Laura Silverman, who's a very funny comedian and also Sarah Silverman's sister.
Oh,
I always
okay.
like to make sure that, you know, you got to be nice and say that she's her own thing.
Yes.
You know, everybody is their own thing. And then... You happen to be related to Zoner.
No.
Which has happened to his dumb anyways. Like, we dealt with this last night, but the happen to be gay idea. I have a friend who happens to be gay.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he tripped on it on the way to work, and suddenly it's all over him. It's not, no. It was, anyways, one of the things I was making before the break, because we talked to Reverend Jim Wallace, and he was making the moral argument that I actually believe personally that that atheism and sort of a lack of religion, this is, I'm not just blowing smoke, Chris. I do think there's an element of... Morality is based on personal choice.
Mm-hmm.
That I behave morally the way I think I should act, regardless of the circumstances.
I act towards people how I would like them to act towards me.
Okay,
which is
great.
Basic Christian.
Act towards people the way I think people should be treated,
mm-hmm.
regardless of how they're going to act towards me in the end.
Yeah.
And the idea is that atheism, at least, and you know, an extra religious idea of ethics or
right.
morals,
not doing it out of fear or reprisal,
is actually a higher order thing. And mm-hmm. Gina in Los Angeles is on line 4, and she's an atheist, and she called in because I have what I said.
Yeah, I actually have to say amen.
How ironic.
I really appreciate what you said, because although the Reverend whom you just had on spoke well, he did interject that in order to be a caring, you have to be a person of faith. And I care about my fellow man. I care. And as you just alluded to, you act out of your own moral conscience.
As opposed to, going to heaven or going to hell. And I think that's to some degree we need laws, and I think that's why religious laws were set up in the first place. But I think we need laws like don't kill someone or the cops will throw you away. But a lot of people, I would never kill anyone anyways. So I'm you know, morally that way. But I think once we get into social laws, once we get into the wider berth of area, the truth is it's our own personal ethics that guide us.
Mm-hmm.
And if your ethics are based on, I just think people deserve to live their life and be happy and all that, so that's why I won't act on them. Not because there's a cop standing over there, and if I grab this lady's purse and run, even though I think I'd like the money in her purse more than she would, you know, that doesn't give me a reason to do it. That idea of punishment doesn't make me moral. It's my decision that makes me moral. And atheists are completely in that camp because you guys don't believe in any of it. In that, you know.
Well, I think there's some great ideas in the Bible. I use some of the ideas
in the
Bible.
There's also some crazy ideas.
There are some crazy ideas in the Bible. But
the only thing I wanted to add is I had something heinous done to me, and the person came up to me and said, "Well, God forgave me," and that just, you know, that absolved him of all heinous acts. And I just, how can you live your life that way, doing something awful and then just saying, "Well, God forgave me."
Well, I think, you know, and that's the sad part, is that I do think there's an element of, you know, if you look at any of the deeper religious paths, there is an element of making up for the, you know, any crimes that you've done. You know, an element. I prefer the Eastern idea of karma in a lot of ways. In that you've got to make up for it. You've got to do, you know, you have to make restitution. But unfortunately, in this country especially, and it's different throughout the world, and you know, even in Canada, there's a slight difference there. But we, you know, there's a certain swath of Christianity in this country that's made it the moral equivalent of a flush toilet. That you just every week you make a stinky, and every Sunday you flush it away, and then you don't think about it anymore. You don't think about where it goes or who it affects.
Thank you.
And that's a bit of a problem. We got a bunch of other callers, but I thank you so much. Absolutely, sure. You know, that's, you know, I think it's, you know, making the moral argument is very important in the healthcare debate, and it is one of my beliefs,
mm-hmm.
I think, is a necessity. But even in your, you know, in your far-right, Ayn Randian, super selfish, I just want to live in a gated community surrounded by private security, you still can't get away from the fact that you are involved in a social system. And
you
have to interact
with other people.
Right. I don't mean a socialist system. I mean other people are touching your spinach.
Yeah.
An element of if you need the FDA, you know, to make sure that it doesn't have E. coli.
Right.
And that is a collective bargaining thing that we have put together as a group saying, okay, calling it socialism is writing it off in some sort of cheap, angry distraction.
Yeah.
The truth is, it's collective bargaining on the part of a large group of people, which is capitalism and free market, if you
Absolutely.
Really think of it.
Right.
We are in the whole insurance debate, on a lot of ways, is that we're sick of paying a separate company, and we're firing that company.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And we're saying, you know what, we're going to make our own company to some degree mm-hmm. that will mitigate the costs of it, because it left to its own devices. Having a sheriff who comes into town who's paid by whoever pays him doesn't necessarily create justice in our little western town. So now we've decided we're going to set up a larger system where we all collectively pay the sheriff, so that we know where his money is coming from.
Yeah.
And that's what happened. I mean, that's why we got cops. You know, so we have volunteer fire departments in a lot of places, but they're subsidized by the government, and they get gear from the government.
What?
Because we can't.
That's communism.
I know. So, that's the idea. This is the healthcare debate, all moralism aside, is a collective bargaining agreement that we have all gotten together. We are getting a bad deal from the insurance companies. They are carving 30% off the top.
Right.
They're dropping far too many people, and they won't represent the, you know, and insure the people who need it the most.
And their stock goes up when they do that.
Exactly. So, to some degree, we're throwing them the Donald Trump. You're fired.
You're fired.
Or you're at least demoted in that, you know, and we're saying,
you're fired.
Right. We need to come up with a better system, even if it's just a balance. Like, look, we'll have this collective idea. We'll get together and pool our money and say, okay, we'll create our own insurance pool, and you can compete against that, because we'll run it based on the fact on outcome, because there's two types of profit. There's cash profit and there's life profit, and insurance is run right now entirely on a cash profit. It is not run on outcome, really.
Right.
It's not run on how great or how healthy we are.
Right.
We've got Carl Frisch from Media Matters next for Right Wing World. I'm Hal Sparks. I'm filling in for Stephanie Miller. This is
The Stephanie Miller Show.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
The hell's the matter with you?
It's the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm Hal Sparks filling in for Steph today because she's under the weather and she sounds like crap. According
she
to
sounds
Chris.
Like crap.
So I didn't talk to her. I'm not gonna. I cannot affirm that at all.
She sounds like the love child of Brenda Vaccaro and Bea Arthur.
Ooh, all right, cool.
Yes.
So yeah. She's ready for the old-fashioned 40s radio show version of, of Golden Girls. On the line, we have from Media Matters, Carl Frisch. Carl, how are you?
I'm good. I'm just having a cocktail on my lanai.
No, as you would, because it's because you're in Hawaii.
Here. Yes, yeah, exactly. That's right.
Right. I'm like, you're in Hawaii. It's still midnight. No, all right. by the way, Carl just has a new piece out on Media Matters for America. Called "Is Dr. Foxenstein or Roger Ailes Building Another Monster?"
Oh, wow.
Obviously he's collecting nutcases. He has been for quite some time, and he's been using them largely, kind of splitting them between Fox and Fox Business Channel, also known as the Anchor Graveyard.
Yeah,
it's where people go to continue to be boring
or cry.
Yes, right, exactly. he had that Alamo quote. Where he said he doesn't care who's on the air, just as long as they're there till the last shot is fired. Even though we lost the Alamo, so I don't know which side he.
Using that. I mean, they were using the tea parties,
right?
The Alamo.
Yes.
I'm just wondering what other moments from American history like. So,
this is our Titanic, right?
We'd gladly sell our freedom for some blankets from you, pale faces.
Exactly. This is our, this is our Titanic. This is the way we're looking at it. Obviously, there's the big war is happening between the White House and Fox News, which, to the White House is a game that should be played as such, and to Fox News is a war that needs to be fought to the last man.
Right. It's a bit like Stormwatch 2009.
Exactly.
The interesting thing is watching the other networks look at this.
Right.
They're treating this as if it's a war between a news outlet and the White House. It isn't a news outlet.
No.
It ceased any semblance of being a news outlet this year.
Yes.
The argument could probably be made that it's been over a longer period of time, but they are no longer a news outlet. They are a political arm of the conservative movement and Republican Party. They are the propaganda arm of the conservative movement. They oftentimes say that, well, that's just our opinion programming at night, kind of like an op-ed page. Well, right. I watch Fox News all day long. I'm still able to string together sentences without medication, but
you know what, Carl? I do the same thing. So
yeah. I have a high tolerance for Thorazine, is what I'm saying.
Yes,
I find myself bleeding from the nose like I've been scanned when I do that. Like veins start appearing all over my body, and I'm like, if I watch one more minute of Hannity, I'm gonna pop like a balloon. Jell-O.
From the time they start broadcasting in the morning until they go off at night for repeats of Bill O'Reilly, they are every news report, every guest interview, every panel discussion is framed from a conservative point of view.
Right.
As much as the folks like Major Garrett, who I actually do respect a bit, having known him when I worked on The Hill, and Chris Wallace would like to say that Fox News only does the opinion thing at night, it's just not true.
That's false. Fox and Friends in the morning is pretty much all opinion.
Oh, absolutely.
But from their point of view,
well,
the liberal
media. There's a dash of crazy in there.
Yeah.
Yeah. I remember.
Naked ladies.
Naked ladies. Yeah, they like the boobs on that show.
I know. I used to have clips from Fox and Friends on Talk Soup when I was hosting it.
Year old boy demographic.
Right. Yes. Well, they used to be just a regular morning goof around show. And then post 9/11, Kilmeade and all them just went crazy.
Yeah.
They went insane and have been forever kind of bunker mentality, hiding and no one like this powerful xenophobia overtook them, and anything you know, supportive of anyone else is evil.
Well, yeah, it's actually one of my favorite things to do is watch them. It's I don't know who Brian Kilmeade is. I only know that what Colbert tells me is brown-haired guy who's not Steve Doocy.
That's
blonde-haired
him.
Lady who's not Steve Doocy.
That's right.
Yes. But you know,
Brian Dilweed is the brown-haired one.
Yeah, what I do know is that Fox and Friends is a perfect example of what passes for Fox's legitimate reporting.
Right.
Which should show you that it just doesn't exist. Even when a reporter from Fox gives a straight news assessment, it's often then twisted and contorted by whoever the live shot is thrown back to.
Right.
You know, and when Shep Smith steps out on a ledge and says something that happens to be accurate, you cannot claim that a 30-second revelation of truth can trump 23 hours, 59 minutes, and 30 seconds of everything else.
Absolutely. And also, I wonder how heavy the lower third scroll jumps when he's having one of those talks. You know, that's one of those studies like terror alerts I'd love somebody to look into. It's like as soon as he goes into a screed, they have a special button that, you know, runs like, fires reported all across the Southland, amber alerts, like anything they can to just... No, don't pay attention to what he's saying.
I always wondered why his show is always looking for a new line producer.
Yes. Yeah. Because they can't find one that will shut him up at the right time.
Right.
So we're going to play Right Wing World with you, which is very exciting. We have special music for this?
Yes.
That's good.
Yeah.
Right on.
Is that the Glenn Beck theme music?
Yeah, right. It should be. Absolutely.
I think it's just the noise he hears in his head all the time, regardless.
Yeah. Speaking of Glenn Beck, he's first in Right Wing World.
He is.
Yeah,
he's got it. He's a great, you know, he finally, I think, has really come up with a legitimate viewpoint of how Fox is being treated, and I think a salient point that he makes here. Let's listen to this.
Yeah.
I'm kidding. That was irony, by the way. If I could write an emoticon next to what I said so that people know.
It'd be a sassy happy face.
It would be. Here it is.
Let me speak to the good journalists out there. When they're done with Fox and you decide to speak out on something... The old, first they came for the Jews, and I wasn't Jewish.
Oh, man.
Do you really think they're going to leave you alone if you want to ask a tough question?
What?
If you believe that, you should open up a history book, because you've missed the point of many brutal dictators. You miss the point on how they always start.
Right. They always start by allowing an official propaganda outlet to continue spouting stuff and just call them out for stuff. That's what...
I actually noticed a glimmer of hope in there.
Yeah?
He did say, get out a history book.
Yeah.
And as we all know, books have a well-known established liberal bias.
Yes.
Well, I think as winter is approaching, get a book out and light it up. That's stunning to me. And I mean, I won't even go to the offensive nature of saying that somehow, because the White House press secretary is saying we don't believe a word that is coming out of Fox and that they are a political arm because Roger Ailes says so, is somehow... the same thing as people being round up and slaughtered for their religious beliefs.
And the media is just watching.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly.
Watching it happen, and like, yeah, that's what's going to happen. Poor ABC Nightly News. They'll be the last to go because they'll be. You know,
are there the gypsies in this?
Yeah, exactly. Yes, they are.
I never thought that the Jews. I showed you where the Jews were. You wouldn't. Once I told you where Glenn Beck shot his show, I would think that you would leave me alone.
Oh. No, yeah. So stunning. And then we have the lovely and talented Charles Krauthammer, who has a last name that might make Beck think twice about those kind of... here's Charles Krauthammer about what the public option really means.
Having a government option as an alternative with lower
government
rates
option.
Would simply mean that the government option,
government.
The government plan, would be heavily
government.
Subsidized and would essentially be a government takeover immediately of the whole industry. And I don't think that's really hard to understand or explain, so that I think once it is explained, it would be a non-starter. You've got to have a strong individual mandate, or you cannot have the expansion of coverage that is proposed in all of these bills.
Right.
You described him as lovely. I'm still in shock.
Right. Well, he has, you know, he's captain of the code word team.
He looks like he's always melting.
Yes, he does. He looks like he's 2 seconds earlier, he just peeked into the Ark of the Covenant.
It's beautiful.
But he uses the word government option instead of public option because government bad, people good.
Yeah. How very Frank Luntz of him.
Absolutely. And the mandatory coverage idea that, you know, that they're going to make you take it, even though I haven't seen a single Republican who said, look, I don't want government health care, so I'm going to get a special tattoo that if I get injured or sick in any way and I come into an emergency room, don't treat me.
Right.
Don't cover me. I don't want to pay into a system that balances out the cost that I'll actually be taking out of the system later.
There should be a lunatic opt-out provision.
Right. Absolutely.
This is nothing new. This smear of government takeover, socialized medicine, has been around for 70 plus years.
Right.
You know, when Krautheimer was just a starting journalist at 75 years ago, he was one of the people pushing it.
Right. I think he was the engineer on the Ronald Reagan album.
Ronald Reagan, don't take that kind of health care.
Right.
If we get Medicare passed, it will mean brown shirts on in your driveway and red hats in your churches. So
which absolutely worked out, by the way.
You obviously missed 1985.
I miss it terribly.
So did he.
Yes, right. Oh, sad.
Oh,
okay.
Sorry.
So
Carl.
So
too soon.
So, yeah.
Too soon.
So our favorite defender of Christmas, Bill O'Reilly, is using the Ayn Randian method to go against health care. Let's hear what he had to say.
I believe this is another in the long line of redistribution of wealth gizmos.
Absolutely.
That's what it's really
absolutely
about.
Sure.
I mean, they want people to have health insurance, and I think most Americans do too. But it's basically taking money from people who have it and giving it to people who don't.
Which is the entire matrix of insurance. We all pay premiums, and the people who draw on it are the ones who get sick.
Right.
And you get to, too, if you need it.
And it's a is he talking about iPod?
Gizmo.
Gizmo. It's a gizmo.
Yeah, it's a thingy-mahoo.
Yeah, he's talking about a loofah.
Right.
Five-year anniversary, guys.
Is it really a five-year anniversary?
Yeah.
I have it on my calendar. Where's yours?
Yeah, really. Yeah, the HuffPost has audio clips and stuff, and you can pick your favorite quote.
Awesome.
Yeah, it's a good time. Hey, baby.
Get my pipe up.
Right. So that's what I love is that this is the defender of Christmas. This is the guy who last week was, or maybe it was even a couple days ago, they all tend to blend together, was arguing just how Christian he is. And then really comes after healthcare as a redistribution of wealth
issue. Redistribution gizmo.
Yeah. Which is the Ayn Rand system. Like, if you can't afford it, you don't deserve it. There's no...
Well, you know, Jesus went gold, so...
That's true, yeah. Yeah. Who is Jesus Christ? I think is the what would John Galt do?
Yeah.
Yeah. These are our it's the weird that you can have a carousel in your head that has like Jesus, Ayn Rand and George Bush and Walmart, and it just kinda rotates and you can just kinda pick one and speak from that point without any crisscross.
Except more and more it's like whenever it lands on George Bush, they're like, who is that guy? I don't know who
that is. Right, I don't know him. Yeah, totally.
Who voted for that guy?
My life.
Yeah, exactly. I never backed him. And which brings us to our final cut, Bill O'Reilly. The last 8 years. But, okay, here, let's listen to it.
As we reported last night, the White House is not happy with Fox News because it favors, the White House believes, it favors the Republican Party. There is scant, S-E-A-N-T, evidence to support that. But the White House has made a big deal out of it anyway.
Scant?
Scant.
MediaMatters.org is filled with it every day.
Absolutely, yes. Go to MediaMatters.org right now, and you'll find out that Bill O'Reilly has actually redefined the word scant to mean its exact opposite.
Yeah,
yeah, right.
And he's a duty head, D-O-O-D-Y-E-D.
Yeah, right, yeah.
Well, he had to spell it for his listeners, his audience.
He should have defined it for his listeners.
Yeah,
yeah.
Well, he did, but just in giving it an antonym. Right. He uses the antonym system of belief. We have to take a break. Thank you so much, Carl Frisch from Media Matters, for being with us and straightening out. People should go to MediaMatters.org. And, of course, read your his new piece, Dr. Foxenstein, which I enjoyed quite thoroughly, sir. Thank you so much.
Have a good one.
Absolutely. Right. Cheers. Carl Frisch from Media Matters.
Hey!
Well done. 1-800-STEP-12 is our number. I'm Hal Sparks, filling in for Steph while she's sounding like crap. And resting up so she can go on Ed Schultz and be back on the show tomorrow as well.
And go on you tomorrow because you're going to be in New York.
Yeah. Well. Yeah. You think she's exhausted now. Don't you go, wow. I'm Al Sparks. We'll be right back after this.
It's like a Mensa meeting with fart jokes. It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
That is live harmonica from the lovely and talented Jim Ward. Firing it up.
Absolutely.
Look at that. Me likey. That's
the multi-talented Jim Ward.
Absolutely. Now I know what that Emmy was for. That's fantastic. Yeah, because we were you and I were singing the healthcare blues, during the end of the break, man. Ain't nothing wrong with that, you know. I got a $500 copay, more than my car, and I don't think it'll get me very far. Oh yeah. My wife's gynecologist has changed, and we can't follow doctors because he's on Kaiser and I'm on Blue Shield. All right.
I got the Blue Shield Blue.
Dan has the... let's go to a call real quick. We can take a call because we're in a short segment here. But Dan in Florida, you've been holding on for a long time, and I thank you for that. Dan, you there?
Yes, sir. How you doing this morning?
I'm fantastic.
All right. Hey, just a couple points I'd like to bring up with you. One of them is basically, you know, I'm disgusted with both the Republicans and Democrats. I'm pretty much, I call myself a libertarian now, almost. Not quite there.
So you smoke pot?
I probably would if I wasn't in the military right now.
Gotcha. Okay. So.
But I wouldn't do anything harder than that.
I understand. That's good. We're about to, I mean, California's going to legalize. It's the only way we can pay for all this stuff. That's good. All right. So go ahead.
Well, anyway, I just kind of, I vehemently disagree with the argument of calling the public option as charity. And one of the reasons why is, you know, charity to me...
You got 30 seconds, so...
Okay, it comes from the heart and from the mind. You know, if the government says, or if you or anybody else says, hey, you know what, you better pay because that's the charitable thing to do. That's not charity. That's the government forcing me.
Understood.
To pay. That's
Understood.
Not my charity. Now, I'm in the military.
We got to go. I'm going to a break, but I appreciate it, and I'll address it when we come back. I'm Hal Sparks. I'm filling in for Stephanie. We're taking a break.
Stephanie Miller.
I was in three improv groups in college. I was in Improvidence, I was in the Wackadamia Nuts, and I know I'm dating myself here, but Three Smile Island.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm Hal Sparks.
I think we've all been in those.
Yeah. Right.
The Wackadamia Nuts?
Right. It sounds like an improv group in L.A.
We're the Wackadamia Nuts. What we're going to need is a location and a job.
A food.
Yes. Gynecologist, celery, proctologist's office. Oh, my God.
Go.
Yeah, right.
Cucumber. I changed my mind. You guys suck.
I was in the sketch comedy group, and we had the show preceding us was called, they were called the Frayed Knots.
Oh, yeah.
Frayed Knot.
I'm afraid not. Oh, God.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah, they used to be an improv group before us that did a spoof improv group called Canned Beats. And they would do crappy improv, and then after each time they would do a really bad punchline, they would all run forward doing jazz hands and go, canned beats!
And, no!
Yes, it was really good.
Oh,
it was a good time.
Oh, my God.
Oh, back in the day. So we're watching right now to see if the Dow hits 10,000 today.
Yeah, the Dow is up 76 points right now.
Yeah, it's at 99.47.
And how are the righties going to spin it that this is a bad thing?
Yeah. Oh, this is Armageddon.
Disaster!
It says it in Leviticus. The 10,000 Dow after the black president is the sign of the apocalypse.
Dow shall hit 10,000.
The Dow is up this much, even though... healthcare reform passed the Senate Finance Committee yesterday.
The hits.
There will be a rending of garments and gnashing of teeth.
Right. Because all these companies across the country now know that a public option is really a possibility.
Yeah. And they won't be saddled with the...
Exactly. Yeah. We'll be competitive with all these other countries that also subsidize their healthcare.
Exactly.
At a certain point, these free marketers got to recognize that, you know, if you want to look at America as a company, we're not offering the same bennies that other countries are offering. And they're getting a lot of the better workers and churning out a lot better product because of it. By the way, wow, so 99.50, we're still up. It's going to be, what do you think, today?
I think it will.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I think we're going
to... looking at the trend right now, I think it will. It only has 50 more to go.
Yeah.
We're in the money.
Yeah.
We're in the money.
And then tomorrow it'll dip 10 points below and people go, the world is it's over. No.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know if it's going to close above 10,000 today, but it will definitely.
I think people are. I think people are hitting the run. Look at that, 83.
Yeah,
it's climbing. It's gone up three. Just
10,000 today, thanks to that socialist commie Nazi
84 and a half.
Obama.
It's going up. It's they're 85.
Yeah.
Wow.
85. Scintillating radio.
Yeah, it's very exciting. Yeah, it's like a countdown to 10,000. Well, I mean, considering where we were a year ago.
Right.
Stock-wise, I mean, like, you know, and obviously the next big thing that we'll be watching for is the real shift in the jobs market and, the fact that we're going to have to deal with a certain class of jobs might be gone forever from the country and that, only education and long-term investment will solve the problem, you know, in education because we've got to prepare, you know, we're basically preparing our country for largely middle-class jobs from now on and that, you know, the blue-collar jobs that we used to enjoy are actually being sort of pushed to other countries. It's a shame that becomes a necessity, but that's where we're
bottom.
Yeah, yep. In that regard. Other countries are doing that because that's how you get the cheap labor. We used to do it here in the States.
Mm-hmm.
Certain states would offer the cheapest blue-collar labor, and other states would be almost entirely white-collar and middle-class because of it. And now it's becoming an international thing. So it's going to be a fascinating thing. To watch, we've got a caller actually calling in right now. I don't even have a name yet on him,
he's still being screened.
Oh yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, then we won't let John on then because John is from Indiana and
Indianapolis.
Well, that's still Indiana.
Still right.
That's
there.
Right. Okay. So John from Indianapolis, how are you? Are you there? Do we have him? We got him? There you are.
Hello.
Hi. Yeah. So. Hey. They'll blame Obama, and then you think
they'll take the credit. They'll say that the Bush policies really are what kicked the economy back. It has nothing to do with Obama. They did the same thing with Clinton when Clinton had his recovery. They said that the Bush policies were now kicking in and had nothing to do with Clinton policies at all.
Right.
And something real quick, I wanted to talk about healthcare.
Sure.
We were over in Munich at Oktoberfest a couple weeks ago, and one of the girls I was with, one of the steins broke and cut her on the wrist.
Ah. Ooh, God.
We had to take her to the emergency room. That emergency room visit cost $110, and she had to pay €38
out of that 110, and they told us if she were a German citizen, she would have to pay nothing.
Nothing, right.
And that same visit back in the States would have ran her probably $1,000 to $1,500.
Right. Uh-huh. No question.
And Germany has a conservative government now.
And their version of conservative really is more toward our liberal side.
Conserving rights and conserving, your society,
And the number of people that praise Obama over in Germany was amazing. That's all they wanted to talk about is how excited they were that we had gotten rid of the Republicans and the Bush administration and all the hope they had for the changes that could come all over the world with him being our president. It's amazing.
Yeah. Thanks a lot, John. You've just given the right wing another arguing point. The Germans like it. The socialists.
That proves he's a Nazi.
You're right. Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Okay. Einsmeid,
thanks so much, John. Appreciate it. That's the thing. How are they going to spin it? They have two basic agendas. Make everything he does look awful and stop anything that could be good.
Mm-hmm.
Or it will stop anything regardless.
Or if something good accidentally happens, they take credit for
it.
Even though they're not.
George Bush put it in motion when he was.
It was the tax cuts for the wealthy gave us $1 trillion or almost $2.7 trillion over the next 10 years worth of debt that are really driving the stock market back up.
Much regulation.
Not the stimulus package, not the pressure being taken off companies by the fact that healthcare is probably going to move forward and give people, especially small business across the country, an option, a way of collectively pooling together that they don't necessarily have currently. Mm-hmm. So
there was a car plant, I think it was Toyota, that went to Canada instead of here because they would be saddled with the healthcare costs in this country.
Well, Walmart's been doing it for ages in their own way by just keeping wages so low that you qualify for Medicaid.
Good
plan. That's really the same thing, but just gaming the system and making it, where in Medicaid, the pay into it on a tax level is way lower, so it ends up costing us money.
Right.
Whereas, I'm going to go into a...
You sounded like Steph there.
Yeah, I know. I think it's on our microphone. Yeah. It's good. that instead of gaming the system, we go, okay, that's actually a way of working. We can actually, now certain workers... you can afford them. As a corporation, you can afford a certain level of workers because you don't have to pay out, that huge amount of money to cover their bennies in that regard.
Right. And as a corporation, they instruct you on how to apply for Medicare, Medicaid or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. Lorraine in Los Angeles is with us. Where are we ranked, Lorraine, in healthcare in the world? Do we have her? Where do we have her? She's on three. Yeah.
She's on three. Yeah.
Are you there?
Hello?
There you are.
Hello. How are you?
I'm great.
That's great. Listen, I wanted to say, because I was watching, everybody should watch Bill Moyers, The Journal.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great program on public television.
Absolutely.
That
socialist network, right?
And he had an expert there, and he was saying, this fallacy they've been saying that we have the greatest health care system in the world? That is totally false. We have the greatest healthcare system in the world when it comes to very complicated, expensive procedures.
Mm-hmm.
But when it comes to chronic healthcare or primary healthcare, preventive healthcare, any other kind of healthcare, we're about number 20 something or 30.
Right.
So they keep saying that, we got the greatest healthcare, we don't want to change it. That is so false. And those complicated, very procedures can only be afforded by the very rich.
By the very rich, right?
And most most insurance companies call them experimental and won't let you have them anyways.
Right.
Exactly. Only if you can afford it. If you're really rich and you can dish out $50,000 and $70,000 or foreign people that come here to get that done.
Right. Saudi princes who can pay cash out of pocket for a $900,000 cancer treatment.
But I really hope the readers, your listeners, go to that Bill Moyers, The Journal. He really knows how to document
I think it's
things.
Smart. I agree. Thank you, Lorraine. I like Bill Moyers a lot, and the funny thing is, he's amazing, but only in the standard that 35, 40 years ago, that show would have been completely normal.
Right. Yes.
That was just news.
Right.
And now just news seems like a godsend of information and lack of spin.
Right. Right.
It's stunning that you're like Bill Moyer's Journal, where you can finally turn for the truth without
it's like
other
Voice
you
know, of America.
Yeah,
listening
right, exactly.
And yet, shortwave radio yeah. in the basement.
And 19,
hoping that East Germany find out.
Yeah, exactly. I smuggled in videotapes of Bill Moyer's Journal on my calves so that you could listen. Yeah, and it's by 1972 standards would have been just a regular news show mm-hmm. like any other. You know, it's
like
you know
NBC News white paper.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do we have time to do?
Let's do it when we get back.
Okay. All right. We got to take a little break.
Yes.
And I'm Hal Sparks. I'm filling in for Stephanie. She's sick and her voice is affected, so she's resting.
She
up.
Sounds like crap.
Will you get off her back a little bit? She's healing. Trying to put a spot.
When she called me this morning, she sounded like the guy who owns the show is trying to kill her for the life insurance money.
Well, she did lunch with him yesterday.
Yes.
I'm just saying. Is there a flowers in the attic kind of thing going on?
Oh.
Steph, if you're listening, don't eat the sugar cookies. Don't eat the sugar cookies. That's not powdered sugar. Okay. We'll be back right after this.
That's the smartest thing I've ever heard anyone say about anything.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm Hal Sparks. I'm filling in for Steph. Sorry, we get talking here.
We're talking about the new Rambo movie.
Which I happen to love because I think it drew attention to the struggle in Myanmar / Burma. It's been going on for a long time.
Myanmar.
Right. I think, you know, again, it's horrible the way a war movie should be horrible. You should watch it. You should come out of every war movie going, I don't want anybody I know to ever have to go through that. You know, unless it's completely necessary, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, that I really do think that's what it does. Like, it was so funny watching the audience when they watched the Rambo movie because so many people were like, it's supposed to be super violent. There's, like, all these teenage kids and stuff, and they're all sitting there like, yeah! And then the first time he shoots somebody, they're like, all right! And then the second time something like that happens, they're like, hey! Yeah. By the fourth time it happens, they're, like, shivering in their seats, sucking on their Twizzlers. Just, this is awful. I don't know where I am. we've got, I would like to do a little bit of, showbiz,
tinsel talk?
Yeah, tinsel talk.
Celebrity stack, that's what
celebrity
she
stack.
Yeah.
That's a good idea.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yummy. We've got
Can
a couple
of stacked celebrities.
Absolutely. Well, yeah.
Pamela Anderson?
Absolutely. Who was it? Had the sex tape just come out? The one of the housewives?
Vanessa Hudgens?
Yeah.
No.
No. Who was it? One of the housewives from one of those shows is, you know, finally got a sex, which just says to me that, like...
Oh, like one of the Real Housewives?
Yeah.
Of-
they've officially, let's just call it as it is, sex tapes have jumped the shark.
They have.
There's, I mean, they did it at Screech, and now it's just all downhill. Oh, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
There was a certain... Remember,
no one wants to see
they
that.
Used to come out regularly. You used to have a sex tape about every 3 to 5 months, and, you know, and they were, to some degree, like a little bit of, oh, goodness, my.
Yeah. I mean that's the only reason Kim Kardashian...
Right.
Has a career right now.
Right. Yeah, no question.
Does Chloe have one yet?
Just sure, sure. Hang on. officially jumped the shark.
Right.
But I digress. Big news in that there's a big split in the Tom and Katie.
Tom and Katie news?
What's Tom and Katie
Jim,
news.
What's going on
apparently,
there?
Apparently...
Suri is being sent to Catholic school because Katie's parents want that. While Tom is shooting some movie of some kind.
And so who do we have to speak to?
Tom is not happy about that.
Okay.
No, 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 no. Suri is not going to Catholic school. Catholics are crazy. You really expect people to believe in a guy who was born of a virgin? Yeah, right. Joseph may have bought that line, but I don't. At least I know Suri's mine, because we had sex once.
Yes, I remember.
Vaguely.
That's not the point! Do we really expect Suri to believe in a guy who could walk on water, raise the dead, turn water into wine, and bread into fish sticks or something, but couldn't stop some Italian guys and skirt some nailing them to a hunk of wood? That's nuts! And do you really want Suri to eat wafers and wash it down with grape juice so she can pretend she's eating some dead guy's corpse and drinking his blood? Yuck! What kind of crazy, barbaric, insane cult would make people do that? When everybody knows the world was created 75 trillion years ago when a space alien named Xenu flew people in DC-8s into volcanoes so they could live forever in people's bodies as thetans and cause people to need either calm disconnection rundown to get their KRC triangles in alignment with the reactive minds. It's so obvious. Why are you looking at me like that?
You should really put a shirt on when you're jumping on the couch. You're about to give yourself two black eyes with your man boobs.
No. Yes. No.
I love his exuberance. There, I said it.
It's catchy, isn't it?
It is, absolutely. Uh-huh. There's a certain amount of joy. Even when Jim does it, I'm like, it's better. I feel better. I feel kind of better.
He's excited about this.
He is, absolutely.
He's passionate.
The other story, of course, this one's very disturbing and kind of explains why, earlier in the program, we had a harmonica moment.
Oh,
With Jim. you can tell the story.
Yeah, what happened, Jim?
Apparently some guy attacked his roommate with a harmonica.
Oh.
Right.
Why did he do that?
Well, we're going to find out.
Was it one of those big comedy ones like they sell in, when you go to tourist destinations? And it's the same harmonica in every place, but it's like
from
the Washington Monument.
Yeah.
And then, Mount Rushmore, giant harmonica. Big ball of string, giant harmonica. Did you got a sticker on the front of it?
Yes.
Well, I don't have one of those.
Oh, sad.
Hey! You ate my leftover chicken finger bacon pizza with chili cheese corn dog fries. I was saving that for breakfast.
Sorry, dude. I got really high last night, and we were all out of bugles.
Sorry, nothing! I will kill you! Hey, put down that harmonica. Ow! Take that! Ow! I'll brain you in E-flat! Ow! 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 Don't call the cops! Oh, yeah? You'll never make it to the phone, because I'm going to kill you with my guitar! With my guitar! There. Ow! 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 And my harmonica!
All right. Right on. Wow. That was like a savaging by Bob Dylan. That's so sad.
Yeah, I'll kill you.
Yeah. A good piece of side.
Highway 61.
That's it
Tinsel Talk.
Tinsel Talk, yes.
We'll be here all week. Tell your friends.
Right?
Yes.
See, I don't feel right saying her lines.
It's almost in the right key.
Almost.
No, not quite. No.
It's
probably B-flat.
It's good. It doesn't matter. It's good enough for the Traveling Wilburys. It works for me.
That's right. And Bob Dylan, I think his Christmas album comes out this
week. Yes.
I've heard about that.
Yeah.
He
does Here Comes Santa Claus.
Here Comes Santa Claus. Down Highway 61.
Well, I'm telling you, it's a great way to make money. You cannot go wrong with a Christian album because there's a certain group of people who've been told that if they don't purchase anything that has the message on it, they're going to hell.
Yeah.
So, the sales will skyrocket.
And, but he's Jewish.
Well, the first Christians were Jewish.
Yes.
The apostles were all Jewish.
Yes, right. But it's a
Christianity is a Jewish sect.
Right.
If you want to get technical, that's what it is.
All right.
You have to be you believe in a Jewish Messiah, just not the Jewish Messiah or the right one according to the ones who don't agree, but still
Jews are still waiting for him.
I mean, they're all
Christians think that he's been here and he's coming back. So
yeah. I mean, Jesus is actually, in Islam as well. It's kind of like a buddy.
But bum Elijah is never showing up.
Yes, but Jews,
every year.
Where is he?
Jews do not celebrate Christmas.
Some do.
Well, of course.
The secular part. Atheists celebrate Christmas, the secular parts of it.
Absolutely. Well, what about winter solstice? That's what I go with.
Mm.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right.
You got to eat all the fruit before it goes bad in the middle of winter. The whole point of Christmas when it is it's supposed to be in the dead of winter. We're like, we're so miserable. There hasn't been any light.
Oh, look
at
orange.
Suicidal. Yeah. Right, yeah. How about presents? Okay, that'll keep me happy for a while.
Let's bring a tree in from the woods, put it up inside.
Exactly.
Sprinkle lights all
and
over
then accidentally set it on fire.
Yeah.
Right. That was a great idea. Hey, candles in a dry brush tree.
Yeah.
Great. That's like a and a partridge.
No!
We still do that in Germany. Pass candles.
Yeah, they do.
On the Christmas tree, which is, yeah, keep a bucket of water nearby.
Right. That's what, and there's some sort of, I'm sure, colloquial German phrase that means that, you know, keep a bucket nearby.
What is that reference to? Christmas.
Schadenfreude.
Schadenfreude, that's what that actually means, yeah. Keep a bucket nearby. Which can be useful for so many things. Coming up in the next hour, by the way, we have Representative John Sarbanes.
Sarbanes, yes. of the great state of Maryland.
Yes, he's calling in at 8:30. He'll be with us, and of course, all in the next hour, I will be here.
Well, this is Hump
normally,
Days with Hal.
Normally Hump Days with Hal, so I will have to sexually harass myself
next hour. Without Stephanie here, it's dry Hump Days with Hal.
That's true. Well, it kind of always is. Yeah. I haven't gotten past even, I'm not even up to bat. This is the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm Hal Sparks filling in.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
The Stephanie Miller Show. I'm Hal Sparks, filling in for Steph because, in the mortal words of Chris Lavoie, she sounds like crap.
Yeah.
She's not feeling well, and it has affected her voice.
Well, she feels okay. She was going to try and rally.
Right.
But when she called me, she just didn't sound
radio ready.
So no. That's what she said. And listening to 3 hours of that would have been a tune out. So.
Well, I'm glad to be here either way and help in any way that I can, you know. Because it's weird to be sitting in her chair on Hump Days with Hal.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
it is Hump Days
normally
with Hal.
When I'm sitting in her chair, she's under me.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Or the other way around, either way, whatever I can manage.
Yeah.
Sometimes she'll hand Chris something, and I can sneak over into the chair before she sits back down. And then she's socially awkward to get me to just go move. She just kind of goes, oh, I guess I have to. And, you know, it's a good time. And then we end up with pictures like you posted a few weeks ago.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's good times. By the way, she's in New York right now.
That's right.
Correct. And she'll be on the show tomorrow and Friday.
Yes. From New York. And she's also going to be on the Ed Show.
Great.
On MSNBC tomorrow.
Interesting, because I'll be in New York at Caroline's all weekend. I get there tomorrow morning, and I'm going to be around. That's interesting that Steph and I are in the same city. That's funny. We're gonna people are gonna talk. We're gonna go on a double date with Jen Aniston and Gerard Butler.
Tongues will wag.
Yes, people will find it very curious. Coming up,
maybe she'll come and see your gig at Caroline's. Wouldn't that be cute?
Well, she should, because my closer will seal the deal.
Oh, really?
That's all I'm gonna say, because I can't say it on the air, because A, it's quite physical, and secondly, it contains an enormous amount of expletives, which I use with, you know, surgical precision. Yeah.
Okay.
So I don't just kind of dump them everywhere. I use them very specifically, and you'll see that if
you're a wordsmith.
I am. I absolutely.
And you leave a tapestry of profanity.
It's true. Well, I put it in there for color. You know what I mean? You got it. You know. It's,
you're a linguist of some kind.
Absolutely. I'm a cunning linguist with a fantastic use of negative space. But I will, if you know what I mean. And you don't. But I will be at Caroline's in New York on Broadway this weekend.
Awesome.
So hopefully Steph will come down and see the show. Very exciting. And by the way, you guys can follow me on Twitter at Hal Sparks on Twitter.
That's easy.
Yes. I had to jump right on it. You know, a new social network comes out, I have to jump right in, because if you have any kind of name at all, and this is a warning to you, Boy Toy Chris Lavoie and Jim Ward. Anytime a new thing starts, you got to dive right in there and get your name, even if it's crap and it fails later. You know, you don't want to have to be the really real Chris Lavoie, you know.
Yeah.
Or the, like.
Now you're Hal Sparks on Facebook too, aren't you?
I'm Hal.Sparks.
Oh.
I had to get the little dot in between.
Jim Dash Ward.
Right, because, exactly. Because somebody jumps in and grabs it.
Wow. There's a Jim Ward somewhere in the Northeast who has all my actual friends that flock to him.
There's a realtor named Chris Lavoie in Portland, Maine that owns ChrisLavoie.com.
Yeah.
Bastard.
Yeah. Well, I was lucky. I got Hal Sparks.com in 1993.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
I've had it
before there was an internet.
Yeah.
They were, that's when you're on CompuServe.
Yes, exactly. It was nerdtacular. I was developing websites and stuff, 93, yeah. 94, and that kind of stuff.
On Usenet.
Like, and people are like, this is the future. I'm like, okay. And I was like,
this will be my online resume. I'll post videos of myself when that's possible.
Right. And people are like, get out of here.
And now all you have on there is like links to your other social networking sites.
I know,
sites.
Because it's spread out. I do have a new one launching next week, actually. The housepark.com is launching. So okay. I'm very excited. We finally... With the help of the lovely Sarah Cat, who's a programmer who I work with and a fan and a
awesome.
Friend. But I want to grab Michael's been holding for a long time, so I do want to get to Michael in Rockford, Illinois, who wanted to talk about Glenn Beck. Are you there, Michael?
Yes, I'm here.
Excellent.
I tuned in just to hear the clip with Beck, and I almost did a Danny Thomas spit take where he suggested that his audience pick up a history book.
Right.
This is the guy that wrote the completely fraudulent Thomas Paine book where he compares himself to Thomas Paine.
Right.
And is so completely inept, he claims Paine is an American when he was actually British.
Right.
And completely lies about, you know, Paine's ideas. The book itself is just a rail against progressive movements. And Paine was probably one of the first progressives.
Yeah.
And, it's just, I just find it really stunning that his audience, he counts so much on his audience ineptitude and ignorance.
Right.
And I think that really it the most insulting thing about the book, and I actually waded into it because I have a friend who, you know, oh, you got to read this. The most insulting thing is he writes like 80, 90 pages and then pads the book out with the original Common Sense, which is public domain.
Didn't know that.
Yeah, he pads the second half of the book. He publishes the original Common Sense pamphlet.
Mm-hmm.
And
all right.
Yeah.
That makes it easy.
So he's making a dime on the original Thomas Paine. Knowing full well his audience is, you know, going to read, you know, three lines of it and give up. You know?
Right. I'm going to write the Da Vinci Code where I talk about, tell a story from my high school and then put the Da Vinci Code in the rest of the book and just hopefully it'll sell big.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's really odd to me that this guy is so popular. I mean, in a much more sane time, he'd be, you know, like Morton Downey Jr. and relegated to the middle of the night.
Well, to some degree, in all honesty, to some degree he is. You know, the Jerry Springer crowd has just shifted their focus. It used to be social, you know, stuff that really they focus on, you know, families lying, you know, pregnant hookers and their first cousin pimps and blah, blah, blah. And now they've just shifted that same mentality and lack of interest and intellectual depth to politics.
Mm-hmm.
And when you do that, you need somebody who will just spoon feed you idiocy in the smallest, most digestible, sweet tasting bites you can.
Right.
You know?
You know, and I'm not one to paint with broad brush saying that, you know, that his audience is all of, you know, one class or thinks mm-hmm. one thing. I mean, I know a guy who's well-to-do, mm-hmm. Friend of mine, and he just buys into everything Beck, you know, spells out, and followed to its logical conclusion, his 10-year-old daughter would be working in a sweatshop, and he wouldn't own his own home, and, you
right.
know, he wouldn't have gotten where he's gotten, had he...
And if she ever did get out of the sweatshop, she would never be able to get a job in any kind of management. She would never be able to move up if she ever escaped it anyways.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It's an excellent point, and I thank you for the call, Michael.
Sure.
Yeah, thanks for hanging on. Yeah.
Beck had the nerve to call it arguing with idiots.
Right. Well, you know, I think arguably he means him.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
You want to argue with me? Here's how you do it. Like, you can't argue with me. I don't have my own words. I just repurpose other works. Judy is on the line. Let's get to Judy real
quick. It's kind of like retweeting.
Exactly. He's retweeting an entire book.
Yeah.
Hi, Judy.
Yeah, hi.
Hi.
Oh, God, it's hot down here. Hot as hell.
Well, you're in Florida, are you not?
Yeah.
It'll cool off. Thanks to global warming, you'll be under about a foot and a half of water within the next 10 years, so you'll be fine.
Yeah. What I wanted to know is you have heard of Dragon Con, haven't you?
I have.
What's the possibility of you coming down to Dragon Con some Labor Day weekend?
I would love to. Every time in the past I've tried to actually make it down there, I've been working that weekend.
What is Dragon Con?
It's probably
probably the second largest fan-based sci-fi comics and collectibles con in the United States. Next to, I think...
Comic-Con.
Comic-Con?
No, but I think the largest fan base that
oh,
is
right.
supposed to be that Shore Leave up in Baltimore.
Uh-huh.
And this is like the second. It's almost.
Well, I'm for it for a couple of reasons. One is I like pretty nerdy girls in really weird costumes. If I have any particular fetish, it's a girl dressed like an elf.
yeah.
It's a thing.
And I don't mean it's not a sexual fetish. It's a relationship fetish. Like that's like if I saw a girl, you know, like the you know in the proper like elfin outfit that kind of. It would hit me in such a way that it's like the Marion kind.
But not a girl dressed as an orc.
Not an orc. No. I've seen some hot orc chicks in my life, but but not that relationship
also the
won't last.
Chicks at the
oh yes.
They have lots of elves.
Oh, see now you're playing my song. Well, I will because of you, Judy. I will make a distinguished effort to this. The next time it comes around to make it down to Dragon Con. Thanks for the invite.
Hello, Val?
Yeah.
The website, you know, it's dragoncon.org or .com.
Sure.
You can use either one. And if you go there, you can get the phone number and call their offices. And all you have to do is, you know, request that you'd like to come. And then they don't invite you right off. You make contact with them.
I have to ask them, right? It's kind of like it's like a vampire-based thing. Thank you so much for the call, Judy. I appreciate it.
I'm a Klingon.
Once they give me permission to go into a Dragon Con, then I can come back whenever I want.
It's well documented on this program that I have an aversion to anything with elves and swords. So,
really?
Yeah, I can't deal with.
Why
any...
do they creep you out? Or something?
No, it's just as soon as something.
Gnomes and scimitars.
Gnomes? No. Anything? Anytime a sword appears in a movie, I'm out. I've checked out. I can't. Can't deal with it.
Okay. Musketeers?
Even that. Yeah.
Is it the hacking up of
no,
other people?
No, it's not. It's just nothing appealing about anything regarding
anything
elves,
sword.
Swords, and orcs, whatever.
I think, you know, in my Second Amendment fight, that swords should be a regular available thing. If you can carry a handgun that allows you to kill a stranger from a block and a half away, then you should be able to carry a knife that allows you, you know, to... engage the actual person. If you're going to defend yourself, then buck up, camper. Let's hit it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? If you
do it up close.
Are you committed? Let's see how, like, are you serious about this person as a threat? Well, let's see you carry it through. Because it's a lot easier to, you know, just whip out a gun and shoot somebody than it is to follow through on killing them with a large bladed weapon, especially if it's a really nice one. That's the other thing, too, is that, you know, a machete's one thing, and you can go to the hardware store and buy another one. But if you have a really nice sword that's been passed down family to family. People are much more. You're much more picky. That's why, if you notice, the higher cultures, as they went on, the better their swords got, the less they fought. You're like, I don't want to break this on your collarbone.
Yeah.
This is nice.
Some work went into this.
Oh man, I stuck this in this dude, and the tip broke. Oh man.
Damn it.
Sick.
Gotta bring out the welding torch.
Totally. Coming up in the next half hour, we've got Representative John Sarbanes.
John Sarbanes of Sarbanes. Maryland. Yes, and he's been a huge, huge, huge proponent of the public option.
Yes, exactly. And so what we really want to talk to him about in the next little bit is how we get how do we get there from here? Now that we've got the five bills and they've all cleared their committees, you know, it's three in the House, two in the Senate.
Right.
We got to put them all together.
Yeah, the House is going to reconcile their three bills.
Yeah.
The Senate is going to reconcile their two bills.
Right.
And then it has to go into committee where those two bills get reconciled.
Exactly. So it's like what we've been watching up to now is watching sausage being made.
Yeah.
And then what we're going to make now is like a chorizo scramble.
That's what it is.
Let's
take a break before we go to Sam in Providence.
Excellent. Okay, we'll take a break. I'm Hal Sparks. I'm filling in for Steph while she sounds like crap. We'll be back right after this.
Don't you wish your girlfriend was a freak like her? It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm Hal Sparks, filling in for Steph while she sounds like crap.
And we're talking reincarnation.
We are. We were talking about how Chris very well may have been reincarnated from someone who was killed by an elf with a magic sword.
Yeah. Which is why he,
Which is why I currently have an aversion.
Yeah. You can't watch Lord of the Rings or any of those movies.
No. Even Princess Bride, even Monty Python and the Holy Grail, I just don't, no.
You don't like swords?
No.
Yeah. Well, Sam in Providence, Rhode Island, Sam, you there?
Yeah, I'm right here.
How are you? There's a cool reason to carry a sword, isn't there?
There are several really cool reasons why we should make it hip to carry a sword instead of guns.
Right, okay.
But you throw down with a guy, you got to think, can I beat him instead of just throwing bullets at him?
Exactly.
There Everybody takes five steps back, hey, they're safe and can watch.
Right.
You can't kill the kid five streets away with a sword.
Right.
And with medical care, you can probably survive unless you're hit somewhere really, really badly.
Right, that's true.
And I fence, so I actually know how to use one.
Oh, right, well, exactly. So you're yeah, I see. This is self-interest. Yeah, you're talking
I'm
from.
I'm sorry, Chris. They're cool.
Yeah, they are. You're talking from a rapier point of view, though. You know.
I also have a broadsword.
Okay, there you go. I'm sort of a big fan of the, like, Chinese straight sword, you know, the Tai Chi sword, which has kind of the benefits of a rapier, and yet has the slashing ability of a broadsword, just smaller.
And it's still hard to do a drive-by swording.
That's true.
That is true.
It's nearly impossible. I mean, it was obviously there was one in the Holy Grail when the historian was killed by the guy on horseback. But again, easier on a horse.
By sorting.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, harder outside the window of a car. And you could break your wrist if you hit something too hard.
That's true.
And you got to be able to catch the guy if he doesn't want to fight with you.
See? There we go. All sorts fitness. Of good reasons. Thank you, Sam. I appreciate that. See?
Yeah, but you'll be having people challenging other people to duels in the street.
Well, I won't challenge you to a duel.
Here's the thing. If somebody challenges somebody else to a duel, the chances of me being hurt while they're dueling each other is a lot smaller. With it. This is a totally ridiculous argument. This has no basis in reality. You know what happened? Was Judy goaded us into a Superman could beat up Spider-Man argument. That's basically what this has become. Like, we totally got suckered into, and this is what happens when you just place that kind of an argument.
The Hulk and Aquaman surfboard.
If the Hulk was in ice, and Aquaman deals with water no matter what form it's in, then he could get whales. All right. this is what happens. And you have to be very careful because I can nerd out with the best of them on so many levels. And thank God so can Jim, quite frankly. I mean, that conspiracy corner aside, which is where, you know, Jim and I share a brain in a big way. Although I feel, don't you feel a bit betrayed by the Alex Jones movement in that they just kind of abdicated any kind of real journalism and it's just gone to a racist, psychotic...
I noticed as soon as Obama came in, all the left-wing conspiracy theories morphed into right-wing theories. For example, the Blackwater death camps are now the FEMA death camps.
Right, exactly. They're still...
What happened?
Different enemy.
Well, the whole point is you make a living doing that kind of stuff. It doesn't help if it ever changes. You can't actually... You know, it's not like Alex Jones has gone, now I can finally buy that cabin in the woods, you know, where I can just sit back and watch cable until the world ends. You know, that's the problem when you make your living off of it. It used to be that Alex Jones was this guy who just did, like, really decent reports on stuff that you didn't hear about or whatever. Right. Now he sells water filtration systems and kind of, like, and vitamin packs and stuff like that on his website. Mm-hmm. So there's a certain... He's got a monetary interest.
Okay.
He
used to rely on him for things, for example, the Italian prime minister, who said that 9/11 was clearly an inside job.
Right.
Because it was very much like the, I forget the name of that program in the 80s, where they were killing people and making it look like leftists had done it. I've forgotten the name of it now.
Right.
But stuff like that, from hearing from foreign press, which you never get over here.
Right. And he would kind of tack it all together kind of in a good way. Kind of like a Mel Gibson's character in Conspiracy Theory. Likeable, a little kooky in places, but for the most part, you know, kind of on the money. And now that's kind of gone away. And it's a shame because it paints it kind of a negative picture because I said Jim and I still share a brain on a lot
Gladio,
of these
Operation Gladio.
Thank you for that. Representative John Sorbanes from the Democrat from Maryland is up next to talk to us about health care. Where do we go from here? I'm Hal Sparks. It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Stephanie Miller.
You are a horrible dinner guest.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm Hal Sparks, filling in for Steph today while she's healing up, making sure her voice is good for radio tomorrow and for Friday. And for she'll be on the Ed Show.
On MSNBC tomorrow.
Exactly. And curiously, I'm in New York at the same time she's going to be there. That's interesting.
Bow chicka bow wow.
All right. We can't talk like that right now. We have an honored guest on the line. So,
that's right.
Yeah, absolutely.
Representative John Sarbanes. Of Maryland.
Yes. Fantastic. Johnny, there?
I'm here. You can talk any way you like.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, sir. Thank you. I can relax at ease. Yeah. So we've been, you know, we've heard up and down that we've been watching sausage being made over the last little bit, and that's why it's been so difficult. What's the reconciliation process going to be like and the combining of all these bills going to be called?
Well, I don't know if there's some new form of sausage out there that we'll invent in this process, possibly. But the good news is we've, for the first time, I think since 1912, when Teddy Roosevelt was trying to get universal health care coverage, we've progressed to the point where every major committee in both chambers that has jurisdiction over this issue has now reported their version of the bill out to the floor, and that puts the leadership in both chambers in the position of trying to meld those proposals together, bring a vote to the floor in the House and in the Senate, and then from there we go to conference. So I'm very optimistic that this is going to happen, and I think there's significant components of the various proposals about which there's agreement. We're going to hash through places where there are differences, but I think people should be encouraged at where things stand now. We just got to keep pushing through this process.
What do you think are the major points of agreement that that are really just a done deal that we can kind of count on?
Well, I think both chambers and all the committees have recognized that there are both places we can find more efficiencies in the Medicare and Medicaid programs, but at the same time, we can take some of the savings from that and reinvest in strengthening those programs, particularly Medicare, where we want to make sure that the Medicare Trust Fund is sound and extends out further than it's projected to under the current conditions, make sure that we're beginning to fill that donut hole that seniors face on their prescription drugs, address some co-payments that now are required for preventive services where we think they ought to be waived in order to encourage preventive services. So that's an area of agreement.
Is that basically an undoing of Medicare Part D, the big problem with Medicare Part D?
Well, it's beginning to try to address the huge hole that exists in the Medicare Part D program, which, kind of took a lot of seniors by surprise.
Right.
I and many other Democrats weren't here when that happened, and we'd like to begin addressing that. Another area of agreement is that we've got to provide enhanced Medicaid eligibility so that there's coverage for millions more Americans who are below 133% of the federal poverty level. And then beyond that, affordability credits so that Americans who make more than that but still have trouble affording coverage can go into a health insurance exchange and purchase coverage. Yeah, that's a key way of beginning to address the problem of the uninsured. One of the big differences still left to be hashed out is the question of whether in that exchange you'll have a public option available to people. The survey I love to cite, because I just think it shows how smart Americans are on this issue, is when they were asked, do you support an individual mandate, which is, the requirement that individuals purchase insurance so we don't have free riders out there and so forth. They were sort of ambivalent. But then when you told them that there would be a public option in the mix and then asked them the question again, they said, sure, that's fine, by clear majorities.
Right.
So think about that for a minute. What they're saying is, don't require me to buy insurance if I got to buy it from the same old cast of characters. But if you give me some more options, then it's a reasonable request. And so I think that's one of the big advantages and pluses and arguments on behalf of a public option.
Yeah, exactly. And then that brings us to the biggest point of contention, probably the public option, you know, itself.
Yeah.
Obviously an overwhelming majority of Americans favor it. Even in districts where we have Blue Dog Dems and hardcore Republicans,
right,
who are vehemently opposed to it and think it's, you know, a socialist government takeover of health care in the country, even though it's optional, even though it's a marginal point, and even though it's aimed, it's narrowcasted at a specific group of people, and would be a boon to small businesses and others that they can't afford health care for their workers and end up being hamstrung by other companies in other countries that can.
Right.
Well,
you know, let me just jump in and say I think the hesitancy on the part of some Democrats, even with respect to the public option, is in some instances based on ideology. I mean, they really do worry that this sort of takes you down the road towards a government-run healthcare system. I'll just mention that all of the projections point in a completely different direction, that will not happen. But in other instances, the hesitancy is based on legitimate anxiety that, you know, for example, a public option that's tied to the Medicare rates will be a problem for certain physicians in a person's district who, you know, just can't make it on that rate, or for hospitals. And so we have to be able to demonstrate and to those folks and address their concerns that the public option, you know, won't create that doomsday scenario for them. And that's part of the process going on right now, Hal. I mean, we are counting the votes in the House of Representatives. We have an overwhelming number of people, but not yet quite 218, who are very supportive of what we call a robust public option, which ties reimbursement to the Medicare rates. But we need to find, you know, we need to find those few last votes to make sure we get to 218. That's the process that's underway now. And, you know, we're negotiating within our caucus on that.
Right.
I know the speaker and the leadership would love to go into conference with a very strong public option and good protections beyond that for middle-class consumers, so that when we come out of that conference, we've still got something that's got a lot of integrity in terms of meeting the concerns of ordinary Americans. And so that's sort of the game plan at this point.
Right. So, and in that process, and for our listeners, sort of a breakdown of who's involved and who's in charge. Obviously, Speaker Pelosi and Harry Reid will have a big part in it, but who are the other players that we're really talking about? Is it going to boil down in some case to another Olympia Snow moment for people, because right now you've got a lot of, we've had over the last little bit, is a lot of accidental, like, pyramid power, where one person in a very odd position, Max Baucus, we dealt with this with him when it first was going through, and then Olympia Snow just for the vote yesterday.
Right. I think there's a whole cast of characters that are involved in this. I mean,
the heads of the committees.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Absolutely. So you know, if you're talking about the House of Representatives, mm-hmm. you've got George Miller, mm-hmm. head of Education and Labor,
right.
Charlie Rangel, head of Ways and Means, and mm-hmm. Henry Waxman, head of the committee I serve on, Energy and Commerce. They're clearly going to be at the table.
Right.
You have counterparts on the Senate side who will be involved. And then you've got pivot players like Olympia Snow emerged to be on the Finance Committee. We'll see what kind of sway she has when things go to the floor. You know, she's right now the only one out there who qualifies this as a bipartisan effort. Whether that will last in this process remains to be seen. I, for one, don't think we should necessarily hold ourselves hostage
right.
To the notion that this is a bipartisan bill if it prevents us from getting a good bill. So that's what we need to work through.
Right. Chuck Grassley said yesterday that, he said, I'm not going to let people say a vote against this bill is a vote for the status quo. When the GOP goes to the floor, we'll tell people what we will do to change the status quo. I think we've all been watching for that for the last 6 months.
They haven't offered anything that would change the status quo, have they?
It's not a it's not a it's
it's no policy to just say no over and over again.
Right.
And frankly, Grassley's been a huge disappointment because for a long time he acted as though he sort of understood the nature of this moment and our need to seize it in terms of addressing health care reform. And then he kind of just flaked out at the end.
Well, he drank the death panel Kool-Aid during August.
I guess he went back to his district in August and got spooked and then decided not to pay any attention to the surveys, which show that notwithstanding all that noise at the town halls, a strong majority of Americans are for a very rigorous proposal.
Maybe he got a nice check from the insurance company.
Maybe. Representative John Sarbanes, thank you so much, Democrat from Maryland, for helping us sort through all this. We have to take a break.
Okay.
All right.
Well, thank you. I enjoyed it, and I look forward to joining you again.
All right. Absolutely.
Thank you.
Cheers. Thanks. It's going to be interesting. You know, it's these accidental power plays and accidental power positions like
right.
Baucus was in, like Snow is in, that I think really speaks to an awkward point in our, in our political process.
Yeah, I think the Democrats are giving Snow a lot more power than she needs to have.
Oh, I totally agree. I totally agree. And that, you know, but in Baucus's case, for example, obviously committee chairs, mm-hmm. you know, end up in a situation where they have, a lot of Obama's requests as far as, people for his administration, that they've been trying to get, they can't get them cleared because
right.
single senators have blocks on them
mm-hmm.
to just not get them considered at all. It's a very strange process. So it was more like my curiosity on how much of that we have to look forward to. We're going to take a break,
mm-hmm.
and we'll be back right after this. I'm Hal Sparks filling in on The Stephanie Miller Show.
Makes me sick in a wonderful, wonderful way.
It's The Stephanie Miller Show.
The Stephanie Miller Show. I'm Hal Sparks, filling in for Steph while she's away on break. We were just talking about Jim's cat during the break.
Sassy Ward.
She can't jump on the bed anymore.
No,
how old is she?
Old. Old, like a million. Cat years.
Well, that's when they become wise and can, I think they live on souls at that point. So
yeah, that's right.
You wake up.
That's when they start stealing your breath.
Yeah, it's good she can't get back up on the bed or she, you wake up. What is that bright light? Oh, my God, it's my soul leaving through my mouth.
Damn you.
Frisky.
Damn cat. That darn cat and her soul-sucking ways.
I'm Al Sparks. I'm filling in for Steph while she's recovering from sounding like crap so that she can be on the radio the rest of the weekend, so she can be on the Ed Show on MSNBC tomorrow.
And so she can come see you in New York, too.
Yeah, do my stand-up and see my big closer, which... It has to be seen to be believed, quite frankly.
And it's filthy, you said.
It's not filthy. It's just very...
Does it involve smashing watermelons?
No, it does not. but you might want to bring a plastic tarp.
Anyway.
Just anyways. I'm not saying... Those aren't melon squishes.
Oh,
I don't even know what that means. You don't even know what that means.
No,
one of us does. You just groan because it's awful.
That was
sounding.
The place to do that.
Right, exactly. It was just filled the gap. You can follow me on Twitter. I'm at Hal Sparks. And, of course, Radio Guy Chris.
Yes, I'm at Radio Guy Chris. And also the Stephanie Miller Show.
I know. It's SM.
Stephanie is now tweeting at SM Show.
Yeah, S&M Show, I like to call it. No. It's just SM Show.
It's SM Show.
Capital S. Capital M, capital
not
S.
S&M. How? That's a completely different website.
Right. It is. It totally is.
Oh, and also the video of Steph's appearance on the Ed Show on yesterday's MSNBC is up at stephaniemiller.com.
Her
and you can go to jim-ward.com and see my little skit I put together with some characters.
All right. Yeah. And Jim Ward's Apocryphal But True, the
that's
CD.
A different thing.
I know.
Yeah,
CD you can purchase. There's a title ad on stephaniemiller.com.
There's that.
I pay attention.
Wow, you're a listener.
Absolutely. I know what I'm doing. And actually, my stand-up dates are actually on a page.
That's right.
Yes, I have my own
just go to the show section of stephaniemiller.com and look for the Hal Sparks page.
Yay!
Yay!
So wonderful. So there, we still have some clips I want to play. This is Obama really making the point that we're here.
Yeah.
You know, where I mean, in August, if you'd have told me that we all five bills would be out of committee and we'd actually get to this point, it was dicey at that point. Let's hear.
Now, this bill is not perfect, and we have a lot of difficult work ahead of us. There's still significant details and disagreements to be worked out over the next several weeks as the five separate bills from the Senate and the House are merged into one proposal. But I do believe the work of the Senate Finance Committee has brought us significantly closer to achieving the core objectives I laid out early in September.
Yeah, one of those core objectives is getting these bills out of committee.
Yeah.
I think that was the biggest win from this bill, because quite frankly, it's a giveaway to the insurance companies and there's a lot of crap in it. Mm-hmm. I think Howard Dean's dissection of it is probably the best that I've seen. I think there is something to everybody having health insurance, and I think we, we'll get to that somehow. And I think just like car insurance, your health
pool.
Yeah, exactly. Your health affects other people. I think, but the public option will keep the rates low, and we'll keep them having to compete. And that exchange is a big part of that. This is the one where you kind of have to hold back a laugh. I so appreciate Obama's sincerity. I really do, but. The other side is not going to listen to this next clip.
Right. Yeah.
We are now closer than ever before to passing health reform. But we're not there yet. Now's not the time to pat ourselves on the back. Now's not the time to offer ourselves congratulations. Now's the time to dig in and work even harder to get this done. And in this final phase, I hope that we will continue to engage each other with the spirit of civility and seriousness that has brought us this far and this subject deserves.
Oh, why start now?
Right. But, it was really after this, the August recess craziness died off that any progress really started being made.
Right.
And that's why it was they were trying to kill it early. Because the nice thing about progressive reforms is that the more you look at them, the better they look.
Yeah, absolutely.
Unlike Republican plans, Patriot Act.
Needs to be looked at
absolutely.
And repealed.
Yeah, absolutely.
Hello.
Yeah, huge chunks of that gotta go.
Yeah.
Parts of the interagency connectivity, great. That's I'm totally
with
you. I'm not a big believer.
The agencies aren't a big fan of that. I have a friend who works for immigration,
right.
And he wasn't a big fan of being put into the Department of Homeland Security.
Right,
but
exactly.
Whatever.
Yeah. Look at the TSA. Technically a private arm of the Department of Homeland Security.
Mm-hmm.
Not a huge threat to civil liberties, just an annoyance.
Yeah, very much annoyance.
Right. But Olympia Snow was put in a very powerful position during this whole thing in the desperate attempt to get one Republican vote, just one, so that they can claim bipartisanship, which is a total waste of time.
Mm-hmm.
I think actually this was pushed to guarantee that if she voted for it, all the more conservative Dems would have to vote for it.
Right.
Because they can't be to the right of her.
Right.
So I think this vote was less about her than it was about them.
Right.
Yes, exactly.
That makes total sense.
Yeah. But here's a quote from her. Yeah.
With one in four Americans either uninsured or underinsured, the track record is clear. The status quo approach has produced one glaring common denominator, and that is that we are having a problem that's growing worse, not better.
Yeah. So she's starting to sound a little bit like the progressive Dem on this issue. She's just that she needed the. She's basically giving that vote for the same reason that you should vote for something like this. The real legitimate issues that are dealing with this. That insurance premiums have gone up 360% in the last 10 years. And
the insurance companies say, so?
Yeah.
What's your point?
Wages 2% in the same amount of time.
Well, we have a responsibility to our shareholders.
Right.
Well, great. Then we have a responsibility to the taxpayers to make sure that they have another option because you can't go without your health the way you could go without a car.
Yeah.
We have public transportation.
And we have sort of.
Yeah, and right, exactly. but even to a limited extent, you have public transportation because if you do need to get to a job, it's a pain, but you can do it.
Yeah.
Health is not an option. Well, the public option is an insurance thing, but you don't have an option to be healthy or not. really, right. and have life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Mm-hmm. Anyways, so wow, we're running out of time.
Yeah.
It just blazes by while I'm here.
I know,
it's
right?
Just, I have so much fun with you guys.
Oh, we have
it's
fun
true.
With you,
Hal. Oh, so I run off to New York to Caroline's this weekend, and hopefully Steph will show up if I can get her out of her hotel room. I'm Hal Sparks. Thank you, Chris Lavoie. Thank you, Jim Ward.
Thank you.
Thank you, Rebecca Baker.
Thank you.
For screening out the weirdos and screening in some of them.
Yes.
So thanks very much, and I'll see you guys at DragonCon.